Welcome. Welcome to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is the show where we find practical, real-life solutions to difficulties bringing people together for a common goal, a common good. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we will have two delicious potluck recipes made for sharing with your new community of, well, if not exactly friends, at least willing participants. If you would like to contact us, please email us at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com or visit our website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Thanks. Also, if you would like to hear prior shows, they are archived on our website, recipeforpeacenow.com. So now, let's get started. This time we're going to be talking about happiness, which is something, of course, that we all strive to have. We'd all like to be happy. But what is happiness within our context? What is it? How should we define it so that we know we're all talking about the same thing? How should we define happiness within the context of, oh, well, dispute resolution, a mediation, a negotiation, a workshop, a seminar? How shall we define happiness in terms of a group dynamic? In terms of a group dynamic, because we're always dealing with a group. Now, sometimes they're big groups. I've dealt with as many as, must have been 80 people in the room. And, well, more, of course, as you're doing a workshop or a seminar. And sometimes they're small groups, but there's a dynamic between the people. So how should we cultivate that dynamic to be happy? And how should we define happiness? How we know we've got it? And I see there's lots of you there. Thank you all for all your participation. Thank you for being here and welcome. Adele and others, in fact, lots of others, are saying that happiness within our context is a successful outcome. Yeah, a successful outcome. People are calling it reaching the stated goals. Pardon me. Yeah, that we've succeeded. We're getting there. And this is absolutely true. That is a happy outcome, and that makes us all feel really good. But also, a lot of people are talking about happiness during the process, which will lead to our successful outcome, right, and reaching the stated goal. And if we actually don't, it will at least lead to satisfaction with the process and to continuing to strive for what we wanted, for what the successful outcome would be. Sometimes, and it's being pointed out, and thank you for all of your participation, sometimes we don't really reach the actual stated goal because it couldn't be done at the moment. We needed more steps to get there. Never been in that situation? The goal is kind of big, and we haven't really reached it this time. But if we have a happy group dynamic, a satisfied one, one that is full of optimism, right, then we will keep going forward to reach the successful goal. Yeah, it doesn't really, well, we're not delighted that we haven't reached, that we're not done, but we're not unhappy exactly either. We're still in the game. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Ruyan says that happiness within our context is creating consensus. We're all in agreement. We all are going together towards the goal. We have consensus. We've decided what it is that we need, what it is that we want, what it needs that needs to be done, and we're working on it. We're getting there. Yeah, we're creating consensus, which always makes for a happier group dynamic because you don't have factions that way. You don't have people fighting on this side and fighting on that side and everybody's kind of taking sides. No, we need to create consensus. We have a lots of interesting ideas about cultivating a strong group dynamic that will be kind of a happy one, right? Miyako and others, and Kira and quite a few other people are talking about empathy within our context. We don't necessarily agree with everything that the participants in the room are saying, because it might be, you know, we want to reach consensus, but we don't have to agree with everything, but we understand the reasoning behind it. We understand each other. And that is how we will create consensus, which we've just agreed we really kind of need to get to our successful outcome. That's how we'll create consensus on what to do next. Empathy. I guess so. A lot of people are using, in order to reach a, to have happiness and reach your successful goal, they're using things that, using words, in addition to empathy, like pity and, and mercy and things like that. That's, I suppose that is empathy. I usually think of empathy within the group towards each other, because you have different ideas on what maybe even success exactly looks like. And you have to get together and decide what it is we're working towards, right, to make the consensus. I suppose that that's part of empathy. Yeah, a lot of people are saying it is. I usually think of those terms in terms of someone you're helping who is in really dire straits, but not really a member of the group, somebody that the group is helping, right? And even that, yeah, it's part, all right, people are saying it's part of empathy. I was thinking of it more in the Rotary way. You know, I mentioned Rotary before. It's the international organization that is dedicated to service above self. I happen to be a Rotarian. We try to help people all over the world who are in need of assistance. And a lot of times that is like they need clean water. I mean, something really basic that they don't have. And, or, you know, yes, people have, thank you. Those of you who have been with the show before know that I sometimes talk about the polio campaign. And it started with Rotarians in the United States, where we've really eradicated polio. Everybody gets the vaccination. And a Rotarian named Ezra Shishome, who is a very wonderful man, I happen to know him, came from Ethiopia, but he lived in the United States. And he looked around and he went, you know, the vaccination is a drop in the mouth. It's not a shot. It doesn't have to be sterile in that way. And just regular people can do it. And he was the starting point for Rotarian clubs to actually go over with the vaccine and give it to people so they don't get polio, administer it. And yes, we are extremely close to eradicating polio from the face of the earth. And yes, don't even mention the Gates Foundation to me, because they're taking all the credit after we worked on it for 20 years. But anyway, but it, you know, done is done, so it's all good. It makes me happy. Yes, it makes me happy to think about polio being eradicated from the face of the earth. But that is that empathy with the people who you're giving the drop to? Yeah. It's also all kinds of emotions rolled into it, because if you hadn't shown up and given them the vaccination, they would have been crippled for life probably, at least a certain percentage. So anyway, so that's part of empathy, I suppose, is true. Yeah. But I was thinking more of empathy in the fact that you understand your fellow people. And there was a lot of understanding to be done with international groups like that, right? Yeah. Because you have to deal with governments and with officials and with, tribal leaders. I mean, one of everything was in the room. And you had to reach consensus that it would be a good thing for you to come in and do this. And it seems obvious, but not everybody was certain. You had to explain it to them. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Cultivating a strong group dynamic, using happiness, making it a happy group dynamic. Gary and others are talking about overcoming prejudice. Yeah. We all come in with preconceived notions, right? Can't help it. We're human beings. We have preconceived notions. They might be preconceived notions about our fellow participant. Yeah. And we need to see them as people, as individuals. As people like me, that's probably empathy, right? And overcome whatever prejudice we came in with, whatever preconceived notion. Even leaders come in with preconceived notions, right? Yeah. After you've been doing this a while and you have some experience, you kind of have an idea of how you think it's going to go. It's a preconceived notion. But then you get to the individuals in your group and the individual group dynamic, and you see that every time you do it is different. Now you pull on your experience, right? That's your preconceived notion. Although it's a prejudice, exactly. Prejudice to me is something much stronger than a preconceived notion, because a preconceived notion is your own, right? Yes, we've done entire shows on this, archived on the website, recipeforpeacenow.com. But anyway, so it's prejudice seems to me to be something that you've acquired from the outside, because somebody told you that that was how things were. But experience is what you yourself have had, right? And that's your preconceived notions. And you need to be careful. You really do. I know everybody comes in with them, me too. But you have to be consciously aware of the fact that this is a different group than the last group and the group before. And they need to have a happy group dynamic so that they can reach their success and go forward. Especially true if you're teaching classes and seminars and workshops and things, because they are inherently somewhat similar, because you're teaching the same thing. But you're teaching the same thing not to the same people, because they already learned it. Yeah. So you have to remember to look at everything with fresh eyes. Yeah. Creating a happy group dynamic. Allison and others are talking about teamwork. That we can work together, perhaps in smaller groups than the entire group, especially if there's something complex that needs to be researched. You know, people have asked me about the term research. Yes, to the internet, of course. But sometimes, depending on what it is you're doing, sometimes somebody needs to actually go look at something, right? A field trip, so to speak, and we don't all have to go. A couple of people can drive wherever it is or go wherever it is and take pictures and report back, right? Yeah. Talk to somebody, maybe. Don't need to all talk to the same person and gang up on them. Yeah, so sometimes research is the internet, and that's very valuable, of course. But sometimes we talk about research being more like legwork, more like going someplace or calling someone or doing something that would be inappropriate to send the entire group for and just repetitive. Yeah. So, teamwork. Make teams. Make them to go do things like that. A strong and happy group dynamic. Nick and others are talking about the shared goal. I think that's kind of consensus, huh? Having a shared goal will bring people together. Bring people who are very diverse otherwise together, because they need to reach consensus and go forward as a group. One person, that's nice. Two people, well, it could be a team. But a whole bunch of people, that's already a force to be reckoned with. If we've all got a shared goal and we have reached consensus about it, we understand where we're going. That's why, you know, a lot of people are talking about making a mission statement. And you all know that a lot of you have been here before, and thank you for coming back, and thank you to the new people. Do well. Welcome to everyone. I always say the words that you say. I say it all the time. It depends. I'm going to say it depends again about the mission statement. Some groups, even if they're very diverse people-wise, they have a shared goal for sure. They don't need a mission statement because they understand that that's why they're sitting in the same room together or dealing with each other. Because they wouldn't ordinarily, but this is important, right? And they're not necessarily of like mind all with everything, but they understand their shared goal. They understand the mission clearly. Some groups need to think about what the mission is. What's the goal? Because you really do. I don't know how I feel about writing down a mission statement if it's going to take us like hours and hours to mess with the words. So, you know, I know a lot of you find it very valuable, and you do it always. And, you know, Recipe for Peace now has no rules except the civility rule. We will not be rude to each other. But it's whatever this group needs. You've got to look at the group dynamic. Or maybe you always like to, and there's nothing wrong with that. I don't always take the time to define a mission statement unless I think that we need to really pin down what our goal, what we're heading for, what our goal is, what our success looks like. And that is tremendously important. You don't know what success looks like. You don't know what the goal really is. How on earth are you going to reach consensus to get there? Yeah, now we've got something important. Now we've got something that really needs to be done, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So cultivating, creating consensus, and knowing what your shared goal is. Quite a few people are asking for an example of when there's a whole bunch of different kinds of people in the room, but you don't really need to write down a mission statement. This is a new example. If you think about it, you've seen this before. In the United States, marijuana is federally illegal. Cannot have it in your possession, cannot sell it, cannot do anything. It's a restricted substance. Federal government. You all know, I know this is a global show, and not all of you know about how the laws work in the United States. So federal is over everything. It's Congress. The states are under federal, but they are trumped by federal law. Federal law is the highest. Then state, and then something more local like city, county, like that, municipality. There's a whole bunch of, after state, there's a whole bunch of small ones. And they all have their own rules. Some of them have to do with extra taxing. There's just a ton of government. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. It's just a statement of fact. But anyway, federal's the biggie. Mm-hmm. You can't go against federal law, technically speaking. There were a lot of diverse people in the room with completely diverse interests who wanted to have medical marijuana legalized. It's a straightforward goal, right? How is the question? But the goal, you knew what success looked like, legalization. You knew what you wanted, legalization of medical marijuana. Didn't need a mission statement for it. What you did need was a strong, happy, consensus-filled group dynamic, because it was tough, and they failed. Failed after a whole bunch of years of trying to get Congress to vote and to get the laws changed. Didn't work. Flat out not gonna happen on the federal level. They had to reassess what to do, not what success looked like. That was obvious. Legalization. Not what they wanted. That was obvious. Medical marijuana use, legalized. Didn't need a mission statement, but did need to reassess the process. Because the federal government wouldn't move. And you had to, yeah, that's the key to it. A lot of people are saying that That's not really what they had to reassess. They had to judge that to be a fact. Not going to happen. How do you know when to give up and to think a different path? Now, who's in the room? We're talking about diverse group dynamic that was strong and determined and consensus-based and had happiness within our context because they really got along well. Who's in the room? They're all different. And it lasted, they tried for like 20, I mean really a long time, years and years and years and years and years. The participants changed over the years, right? It took a long time. The technology changed over the years. And somebody had to get consensus. They all did to try a different path. They had to give up on the federal government after all those years. They had to agree to give up. But because the group dynamic was so varied and so strong, they didn't dissolve. They thought of a different way. Now, who's in the room? Yeah, lots of different kinds of people, right? Yes. You've got people with an economic interest. They want to grow it and sell it. You've got people who are ill. They want to use it. All kinds of different groups representing different kinds of illness. Everything from AIDS to old age, really, and to pressure from pressure behind the eyes and like that. I mean, just all kinds of people. With all kinds, yeah, from headaches to the trauma of war type stuff. I mean, really, one of everything. Kinds of illnesses that wanted pain alleviation, right? Marijuana is very good for chronic pain. And it was pointed out all kinds, it was all pointed out, all kinds of stuff was pointed out to the federal government about the fact that in the years, you know, it's been around a really long time, and they tried a really long time. And over the years, the plants themselves became more cultivated, and there were hybrids. And there's a lot of hybrid marijuana that will not make you high, will not give you a euphoria. It is just for pain management. Yeah. It's truly medicinal. It's just pain management. It has nothing to do with, well, in the United States, we call it getting stoned. It has nothing to do with, yes, thank you, there's lots of words for it. It has nothing to do with any kind of recreational use, right? It's just for pain. And they've bred it like that. The plants have been hybrided and bred and spliced and whatever you do with plants. I don't know anything about planting, but about farming. It's kind of like, really? That just comes in a package to me. I'm an urban person. But they did all kinds of fancy stuff and put different properties in and like that. Yeah. So, all kinds of people in the room mapped out what success, what the process was going to look like, worked on it, spent a lot of time and effort and funding and like that, didn't work. You had to have the first consensus, which was really something. I got to tell you, it's a wonderful example of working a long, because, you know, the polio example was successful. We nearly eradicated polio. But it's a wonderful example of teamwork and a strong, happy group dynamic spanning all over the country as technology got better, because nowadays you can Skype and everything and be all over the country, spanning all kinds of groups, all kinds of reasons to be in the room. A lot of times we talk about that. We talk about reasons to be in the room as one of the things you know when you do a group dynamic, when you're thinking about it. Why people are there. And a lot of times they're there for the same goal but different reasons. like we just discussed, the economic, the illness, the social good. There were people fighting for social good. Lawyer teams, people in the legal profession who felt the prosecution of marijuana growing and use and like that was unfair and ridiculous. Social reformers, all kinds of people. And they fought really hard. And the decision had to be made that it wasn't going to work on the federal level. Now, the fight still goes on. I mean, there's still some pressure because we still like it to be federally legal. But they went for the state level. I cannot even begin to explain to you how crazed that was. Because you had to get the states to put on their ballot for the citizenry to vote whether or not they wanted in their state, within the boundaries of their state, to have legalized medical marijuana. Think about that. You had to get on the ballot, big deal. You had to get a whole bunch of signatures and like that. And a concerted effort. You had to get it voted on, get it passed. Media blitz. Concerted effort also. And money. It's true. Because, I mean, not everybody agreed. You had the opposition was very strong, too. And it worked. And state by state. Very strange. But anyway, that is a good example of a diverse group dynamic that was strong enough because it was based very heavily on a goal. And they had reached consensus and were in, and they really had a happy group dynamic in the sense that they really were working together well. Does that make sense? To go forward with such a plan. Yeah. A shared goal. Yeah, Gianna and others are saying the key to it is when understanding when happiness has been achieved. Understanding when happiness has been achieved. Mm-hmm. And Kareem and others are talking about the difference between optimism and pessimism. And that happiness is really optimism. We're going to reach our goal. Mm-hmm. And whenever we have a setback, we go, well, you know, it's only temporary. We're still going to reach our goal. We might have to modify how. Mm-hmm. Or we might have to make this time steps towards reaching the goal. Mm-hmm. Because it's going to take us a little bit of doing here. Mm-hmm. This time, this step is towards reaching the goal. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Optimism versus pessimism. Mm-hmm. And sometimes people have to be brought into the optimism, into the happiness. They're not generally optimistic people. And you have to recognize that. We all know people like that. We all know people that view the world as negative, as a negative instead of a positive. Yeah, and I see that all of you also have known people in your lives, some kind of relatives with some frequency, who can turn a positive into a negative if they try really hard, mm-hmm, and convince themselves that something that was really good was actually bad, right? Yeah, it's just their way. It's just... Yeah, I know people like that. I have relatives like that. They just, whatever it is, they've had a nice time or somebody was nice or whatever, and they twist it so that it works its way into an insult in some way. It's the darndest thing. And you could just see it happening and you're like, wow, I hope crazy doesn't run in the family. Oops, did I say that? We've talked about what a happy group dynamic is and how to encourage people to have enthusiasm and empathy and overcome their preconceived notions and act as a team and understand when happiness has been achieved and to think in an optimistic rather than a pessimistic manner. So, now that we've defined it, how can we encourage happiness? Because it's essential to a strong group dynamic. which will get you the consensus and get you the success. How can we encourage it? How can we cultivate it? How can we make the group buy in? How can we encourage it? Mm-hmm. A lot of people, exactly, Shelley and others are saying by keeping enthusiasm levels high. Keeping enthusiasm levels high. That's where a timeline sometimes is good because it's visual. It's true to human nature. It doesn't make you have to be a pessimist. That we forget how far down we were when we started, right? How far we've come to this point. And that's a real key concept, to keep the enthusiasm level really high, to keep people really, really working, and to understand that, you know, the process takes a while, and there'll be some steps back, right? Two steps forward, one step back is an expression that's often used, kind of an Americanism, but you understand the idea that sometimes things kind of don't go in a straightforward line. They go a little bit off to the side, and they circle around, and things like that. Mm-hmm. But you need to keep your enthusiasm and understand that we are getting there. We are having success. Mm-hmm. This is an interesting point. Tanika says, how do we encourage happiness? Tanika says, by showing and expecting respectful interaction. By showing, remember we're the leader, we're the good example, and expecting respectful interaction. That is so much the civility rules, isn't it? Yes. We talk about them all the time. I know this. But they're kind of the one core value that we stress, the civility rules. You make them up as you go along, I suppose. You can write them down if you'd like. But the basic civility rule is we will not be rude to one another. We will treat each other with respect. Mm-hmm. We will consider everything. We will consider opinions. We will act in a respectful manner towards our fellow participants. Yeah. Yuri says by being welcoming is a good way to encourage a happy and strong group dynamic. By being welcoming. And that goes to respectful interaction, right? And also literally by being welcoming. Because it's the leader's job to kind of make everyone feel that they are truly a part of something important. Mm-hmm. And that's the key to it. Being a part of something important, something's going to get done. Something that we agree would be good. Yeah. Respectful interaction and by being welcoming. Mm-hmm. Jan and others are talking about leading by good example. Yes. We need to be enthusiastic. If the leader has lost their enthusiasm, that's kind of a bad thing, huh? Because the group will lose their enthusiasm. Mm-hmm. And will dissolve. You won't have a strong and happy group dynamic. That's how groups don't get anywhere, and they dissolve. Yeah, you know, it's a good point. Sometimes the group, the participants, will either dissolve or seek a better leader, right? No, that would be embarrassing. You need to lead by example. Mm-hmm. Because you don't want them to seek a better leader because you are the ultimate good leader. Yeah, you're it. You're the best there is. And that's very important. Mm-hmm. And also we want to encourage innovation, as people are saying. Encourage thinking outside the box. Encourage to really consider all options, right? To really think about it. To really say, you know, this would be a good idea. Or how about we try this? Or maybe we should try to get together with another group. What about that as an option? get together with another group, really think about how it is that we are going to accomplish our goal. How it is that we're really going to meet and exceed expectations, right? Yeah. True even in a seminar, true even in a class in a seminar. Yeah. How are we going to get this done in a successful and, quite frankly, hopefully kind of time-efficient manner? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So encourage innovation. Hussein says to encourage open discussion of feelings. Well, that's a good point. How are we going to know if we're happy if somebody doesn't mention that they kind of are or can say when they're unhappy, which is also a good thing. Now, here's the point that's being made. Quite a few people, and thank you for all of your participation, are kind of disagreeing with the concept of open discussion of feelings. Mm-hmm. Quite a few people are saying there's no place in a professional setting. Well, I think it's the part about open discussion. You don't want to get sidetracked. You're not a psychiatrist. Well, maybe you are, but that's not the purpose of the group. To get sidetracked into some sort of personal feelings and touchy feeliness and like that. If it's keeping you from reaching your goal, then you need to a little bit curtail that, right? Now, if you've got unhappiness and you kind of didn't realize it, that's something to know. I think, it's my personal feeling, that one of the things that you do on the timeouts when we have the food and when we're kind of networking and not in the whole group is to gauge feelings and to be open and around to be talked to about them, right? I honestly think that an actual personal feelings type discussion about the group, hopefully, is not meant for the whole group and to take everyone's time. Unless you, as the leader, judge that it needs to be put out into the open. Does that make sense? I handle that individually first. And then if it seems to truly be impacting the group as a whole, we talk as a whole. Does that make any sense? Yeah. It's kind of the why I stick around as the leader and am accessible during the timeouts and the breaks for food and like that. Because you can come and talk to me and tell me something that's perhaps happening behind the scenes. Sometimes someone in the group is contacting some members of the group and not others and trying to sway opinions, shall we call it? Yeah. Yeah, people call and hijack the group. But that's not good consensus building, right? And that needs to be addressed, but I like to hear it personally first and judge how to handle it so we don't somehow get sidetracked so badly that we have trouble getting back on point towards our successful goal. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. People are talking about some sort of bad behavior or resentment, it prevents resentments and misunderstandings later. Mm-hmm. It's not that I don't want to know, because I do, and it's not that it won't be handled, because it will, but you got to be careful that you don't somehow become a vetting point for, people call it psychosis. Well, that's not a very nice way of putting it, I suppose, but it's true. You got to be careful that the group doesn't just become a vetting point that's off point of how we're going to reach success. So you got to keep going forward in the process. And it's easy to get derailed because people are interested and they want to talk about their feelings and stuff. And that's nice, but it has to be within the context of how's that going to help us go forward. Yeah. Mm-hmm. A lot of people are saying that in order to have a happy group dynamic, that happiness is when you encourage cooperation with other groups. Mm-hmm. Encourage cooperation with other groups. Yeah. It's a good way to spread the good and to make the process faster and to pool resources. Ooh, a very fine thing. And, you know, resources might not necessarily be money. Could be expertise. Yeah. Could be experience in this particular issue, but also expertise like computer expertise or some sort of technical expertise that's knowledge but not necessarily specific to this but can be used to the specific issues. Mm-hmm. Let's see. Of course, cooperation. A lot of people, Bree and others, are talking about connections within the community. Yeah, reach out to the community. First of all, you're going to need their help because you want them to be behind whatever it is that you're trying to do, right? A mighty fine thing. Connections within the community. Rasmir and others are saying they're not only within the community, but outside the community so that others know what's being done. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And quite a few people are using a phrase that I think might be an Americanism. It's you reach out to others within your community, but especially if you're reaching with outside your community, to people that are not you, kind of, and you need to deal with them and you need to get them on board, mm-hmm, so that they understand this for where their interests lie, and they lie with you, with your ideas, with your group. And sometimes you need to, this is the phrase, stretch your comfort zone. Stretch your comfort zone as a group. Reach out to others. It is human nature to want to deal primarily with people that you understand that are, well, they're kind of like you. They may not look like you, but they've got ideas that are similar to yours, and therefore you find them easy to deal with. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing wrong with that. But you got to deal with the outside world too, most of the time. And especially if it's not an enclosed thing like a seminar or a workshop. You've got to deal with how can we get together with the other people, with other groups and other organizations. Mm-hmm. And you might have to stretch your comfort zone. You might have to have empathy. Uh-huh. You might have to think about your own reactions to whatever is happening, and whether or not they're reasonable, whether or not they're good. I mean, everybody thinks they're being reasonable, but you got to think about it. You got to say, well, am I acting in an unreasonable manner? Need to stretch my comfort zone. Need to go outside of it and make an effort to reach out to someone else and to get together. Because there's strength in numbers. Yeah. Yeah. This is a very good point. Lawton and others are saying that you want to encourage cooperation with other groups because it enhances your reputation. Why not? I mean, that would be a good thing, right? That's not being selfish. You want to reach out and connect as many groups and as many people together. And when you do this successfully, and as leader you are the impetus for it, it's part of your leadership skills, your reputation will be enhanced. And what's wrong with that? It means that you're the best. You're the best of the best as a leader. Hey, we knew that. That's a mighty fine thing. your reputation will be enhanced. Nothing on earth wrong with that. Mm-hmm. Yes, Misha and others are saying that you learn new things, learn new solutions. You learn a different way of looking at it. You know, if you have a group that's fairly similar, the kind that doesn't need the mission statement written out, right? You kind of think along similar lines oftentimes. It's just a natural thing. It has to do with all kinds of background stuff. But you've gotten an idea of a solution that seems like the only way. You've talked about it. You've considered it. You've got a strong and happy group dynamic. And then you reach out into the community or outside of your community to other groups because you want to pool resources. You want to have power in numbers, as Felicia says. You want to have the benefits of their expertise. And you know what? They've got different solutions that you never even thought of. It's a learning experience. Fantabulous. You need to be strong enough as a group to understand, to listen to the other group, and to blend together in consensus. Because sometimes both sides can modify what they think and make a stronger solution than neither one of them thought about individually. Yeah. Yeah, it's like the marijuana example. It was straightforward. Go to the federal government. Then it wasn't so straightforward, and you went and did different kinds of paths and tried to get spokespeople and like that in the federal government and to reason with them. Then you had to decide that they were unreasonable. Yeah, this is all complicated and fun and happy, and it makes a strong group dynamic. So it's a learning new solutions. Mm-hmm. George and others are saying not only is it a learning moment that you can learn, can think about other sides, can think about other things, but it's a teaching moment too, right? You're teaching everybody what your group thinks and a new solution to them. It's a teaching moment. A teaching moment to lead by example also, right? To lead by example, to show your enthusiasm and your strong group dynamic. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Let's see. Raz Raj says, yeah, this is a really good point. When you get together with other groups, it prevents duplication so you can go further faster. When you get together with other groups, it prevents duplication so you can go further faster. What a good point. Don't have to reinvent the wheel every time. You could say, well, you know, you've really made some inroads here. We've made some inroads over there. Let's get together. Let's push together. And then we won't duplicate what's already been done. And we'll go further, faster. Mm-hmm. Lydia and others are saying that when you get with new groups, you align with more experience. Mm-hmm. And you get new ideas and technology. Mm-hmm. Especially in today's technological world, sometimes there's an app for that. Yes, thank you. People are going, you know, there could be an app. Yeah, there could be. There's an app for everything as far as I can see. But whenever you reach out and you join with new groups, with other groups, not necessarily new, but with other groups, you gain a whole bunch of experience. You gain a whole bunch of new ideas, right? Yeah, and expertise. And, yeah, a lot of people, a lot of groups are using technology in wonderful ways. Mm-hmm. Teddy says that when you reach out and blend your strong and happy group dynamic with others, it creates a network of people to call on in the future, even when the present issues have been resolved. creates a network of people to call on in the future, even when the present issues have been resolved. Good point. Now you know somebody. Now you know somebody that you have successfully dealt with. And when new issues come up, you can call them. We can think about a new group or getting the old group together. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Hannah really, I'm going to use this as the last one because it's so well stated, and also because we aren't going to head for a recipe, I hope. I know sometimes I don't leave time. Hannah says that happiness is understanding how to deal with others and create solutions out of adversity. Happiness is understanding how to deal with others and create solutions out of adversity. Yes. And one of the ways we get to that understanding of that Recipe for Peace Now does indeed promote is to get together and have some food in the room. Now, the food is really a tool, right? I mean, you might be hungry. It might be dinner time. But it's really a way away from the formal negotiation and to get to know each other, and it's also a time when some sort of personal feelings can be vented to the leader. And like that, it's a good way to get to, yeah, people call it bond, I suppose, to really network with the other people in the group and to see them as individuals and to gain empathy, like we talked about, really, and understanding. Mm-hmm. And to speak in a less formal manner, and not in front of everyone. Mm-hmm. Because sometimes that's daunting, and sometimes we want to know something that's not really so much for the whole group. Now, when we're going to have food, and I guess I'm going to say the same thing I say each time, but it's very important, we need to take a survey and find out if anybody has an allergy, a food prohibition, or religious restriction to some sort of food. We don't want anyone to have a bad time, and we're going to disseminate this information to everyone. Also, when you have people bring food, they need to list what is in it. Not what it's called, but what's in it so I can run my eye down the list and find out if I can eat that. Mm-hmm. Same idea. Don't want anyone to have a bad time. I also think, primarily because I hate it when parties run out of food, it's kind of a party. It's a convivial atmosphere. It adds to the happiness of the group. I think you should have at least one safe recipe. What's a safe recipe? It doesn't have too many ingredients, and the ingredients would be familiar to my participants. Now, this is a global show, so what's familiar to my participants might not be to yours. Mm-hmm. And we've taken the survey, and it looks like everybody can eat it. We're still going to list what's in it, but it sure does look like everyone can eat it. This time, let's do the safe recipe first. Yes, next time we'll get to the other one. Mm-hmm. This time our safe recipe is a honey Dijon turkey breast. It's very delicious. You, of course, slice it up ahead of time so people don't have to mess with the big knife. I like to slice it thin and then spread it on a platter. Mm-hmm. Tongs so that everybody can just take a slice. Uh-huh. It's a turkey breast because it's easier to slice. I can get it in my grocery just as that, as a turkey breast. You can make more than one. And it is easy to serve because we're not going to do a sit-down, right? So it's easy to get to, easy to serve, easy to slice. I'm very big on not being too messy so that people can just put it on their plate. Mm-hmm. If you get a whole turkey, you've got a lot of odd pieces. The breast will slice the best. So that's why I picked it. And I can just buy it. If you want to use a whole turkey, same concept. Okay. So we're going to make a marinade. We're going to have 3 garlic cloves that we're going to mince. You think I use too much garlic, use less. 1/2 cup of honey, 2 tablespoons of olive oil, 3 tablespoons of Dijon mustard. It's kind of a spicy mustard, if Dijon's not a word that comes in mind. Let's have 3 tablespoons of soy sauce, kind of salty, very good. If nobody's allergic to vinegar, you could put in a little balsamic. I usually don't just because I'm scared someone might be allergic. Then we're going to have about a 4-pound boneless turkey breast. It comes like this. It comes from the butcher like this. It's a huge hunk of turkey breast is what it really is, and it doesn't have a bone, and it's really easy to marinate, like a chicken breast except bigger. Could you do this with chicken breast? Don't see why not. But then you'd have a lot of, well, yeah, you could. You're just going to bake it. Yeah, why not? Let's have a cup of chicken broth. We're going to divide it into 2 half cups of it because we're going to use it 2 times. So we're going to mix together the garlic, the honey, the olive oil, the mustard, the soy sauce, and mix it all nice and around, the vinegar if you're going to use it. We're going to take our turkey breast. You know that you need to rinse it and pat it dry. I don't know why you do need to do this, but I always do it, and so I say to do it, right? Right. It doesn't have a skin on it anymore, right? And if it did, you pulled it off. And it's not frozen. If around here you can get frozen turkeys, frozen turkey breast. If it's frozen, you need to defrost it first. It needs to be a regular refrigerated temperature. Mm-hmm. So we're going to marinate it with what we've just mixed together. I can get in my town plastic bag, like a baggie, and I can put the marinade and the turkey in there, and it's real neat. And then I stick it in a shallow pan, and I put it in the fridge, and then I turn it, what, every half hour or something, so that it's all mixed together. And then I can do more than one like this, right? Because it's in its own marinade, in its own bag. I think this is the neatest thing to do. If you can't, you can just turn it over in the pan, in a pan in your fridge, right? Okay, so we've got it in the fridge. You need to have it done at least 4 hours, so like half a day. You do it in the morning, you come back, and you make it in the evening. Mm-hmm. We're going to preheat our oven to 325. We're going to take that nice turkey. We're going to add 1/2 cup of the chicken broth to the bottom of the pan. We're going to stick our turkey in it. We're going to stick our marinade in it too, right? And maybe we could even use the same pan if we've been marinating in the pan. It would be okay. Mm-hmm. Then we're going to cover it with a piece of foil. Could you use a lid? Don't see why not. I always use aluminum foil. See why you couldn't use a lid? Yeah, but you need to cover it. You're going to roast it for 1.5 hours. Give a little baste in between times. The last 1/2 hour, you're going to take off the top, the foil, the pan top, whatever it is that you're using. And you know that other 1/2 cup of the chicken broth? We're going to add it. And we're going to let the whole thing roast at a higher temperature, like at 450, for about 1/2 hour. So that it gets nice and brown and roasted and delicious and cooked all the way through, you know to use a chicken thermometer, a meat thermometer, to make sure that it's cooked all the way through because you sure don't want raw poultry. And then you've got it. Yeah. Delicious. You slice it all up. You put a little bit more juice on it, maybe out of the pan, since you don't want to waste it, right? And it's done. I like to let it stand for about 10 minutes before I slice it, just because I don't know what kind of turkey we've got here. Maybe this says something about the turkey. But if you cut it right away, all kinds of juice gushes out of it. It sounds disgusting, doesn't it? But it's really not. But if you let it stand for about 10 minutes, it kind of internally cooks a little bit more. And also you could bring it someplace cooked, right, because you're doing potluck. And so don't slice it before you get there. Keep it all together in the juice and like that. And then when you get there, take it out and slice it. And it will make nicer slices. And it will be moister on the inside. That's it. It's easy to do. It's yummy. Everybody likes it. And you can serve it with loaves of bread and condiments and make sandwiches. Yay! Which is a very convenient and neat thing to do. And then people, if they don't want the bread, they can just put a turkey on the plate. Mm-hmm. So, that's our honey Dijon turkey breast. Thank you all for all of your participation. Yes, we made it to one recipe this time. Next time we'll try to get to the pork stroganoff. But we've run out of time. Thank you all for being here. Thank you for your participation. Thank you for listening. If you would like to contact us, recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. The website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Prior shows are archived on that website. Mm-hmm. You can also connect with us through it. Thank you for being here. Thank you for all of your participation. Thank you for listening. And please do come again. Thanks. Bye-bye.